Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor at HowStuffWorks, and with me is Ben. How you doing, Ben?
Heyo.
Oh, okay, Ed McMahon minute there, huh? Very cool.
I aim to please. What's going on?
You know what? I say this sometimes, occasionally, maybe a little too often, but I'm excited about today's topic again.
Really?
Yeah. It's a racing topic.
Oh, that explains
it's
it.
It's a racing topic, but mm-hmm. miniature.
Miniature racing?
Miniature racing, not called miniature racing, it's called tether car racing.
Oh, tether cars.
Tether car racing, yep.
Okay, so give me a second here. Catch me up to speed. We've talked about racing before. We've mm-hmm. talked about miniature cars, slot cars.
Yeah. Pinewood Derby cars.
Mm-hmm. Tether cars, though.
Tether cars.
What are tether cars?
As the name implies, they're tethered to something. Well, I'll fill you in on that in a minute, but tether is really something that, well, just like tether ball. The ball's tied to a string or rope or, you know, something, some type of device.
So they're going in a circle around a central point.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That's what a tether car basically is. It's a model car that goes around a central point.
Scott, my friend, right? Yeah, you're making sense, but from the explanation you're giving me, it smacks of a layman's description. I think you're cutting out some details.
Needs a lot more. Yeah, it needs a lot more. And, okay, let's just get into it, what these are, really.
All right.
They're small cars. They've got two-cycle engines.
Okay.
They are two-stroke engines. They're really the small engines that are the same type that power, like, model airplanes. You know, the real small with a glow plug, and mm-hmm. Usually you fill them with the Cox fuel that comes in a box.
Right.
I don't know if you remember those from a long time ago or not, but and you have to, you know, spin the propeller with your hand to get it going. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of engine that I'm talking about. The cars are kind of a streamlined vehicle. That's what they've evolved into. We'll talk about that in a minute, but they go in a circular path around a pole in the center, and they're tethered to that pole with steel cable. And these things hit incredible speeds that we'll also talk about in a minute, but they're ridiculously fast cars. I had no idea that tether car racing was so cool until I, you know, just stumbled across this video.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it must have been about a month ago. I've been thinking about this for a while. You've watched it as well, right?
Yeah, I watched it when you told me about it. For our listeners, a lot of times the way that we get geared up for this podcast, Scott or I, usually Scott, will find something really cool, and I'll have no idea what he's talking about, because I guess that's sort of my job. and then you'll show it to me, and I have to admit, I was very surprised by the, you know what, I don't want to sound like I didn't expect much, but there was a lot more than I expected in terms of speed.
It doesn't sound all that impressive when you say tether car, because you're talking about a car that's attached to something.
It seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, it really does. We should, you know, let's talk about the beginnings of this sport.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of work our way through, and I'm going to kind of reveal some things along the way here that are going to shock you.
You're going to drop some gems?
A few here and there, because really, like you said, when you watch it, it's surprising how interesting this is.
Well, how long has it been around? Let's start there.
That's a good place to start, because it started as far as I can tell, now all this information is coming from the one and only source of information at this point, the AMRCA, which stands for American Miniature Racing Car Association. AMRCA. And you can find all this information on their site. According to them, the sport began in 1937 on a vacant lot in L.A., California.
That goes way back.
Way back. And these were, you know, handmade models, and the lore is that the first cars were actually built using model airplane engines that somebody had, you know, kind of somehow modified, put it on a board with a couple of wheels, and, you know, found a way to make it drive the wheels. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how this started. Now, you got to remember that, and this all makes sense, the evolution of this makes sense, is that if you think about 1937, there were no radio-controlled cars. They didn't have a radio-controlled device that you could use to operate the vehicle and make it do figure eights or you know, go in an oval or whatever you wanted to. If you had a car that was powered, it was going to go in a straight line. or it was going to follow a course that you'd set some way, you know, a track of some kind. That's not much fun if you start up a car and it takes off and you have to chase it, you know, a mile away. It may be a little bit of fun, you know, watch, or, you know, have somebody else catch it.
Right.
But, so they had to tether these cars. And if you tether a car, if you think about this, you got a tether, which is a rope or a string or, sure. Probably metal in this case because you got a heavy car. These cars were about, I think the original cars they said were around 8 to 10 pounds in weight. Hmm. So they're pretty heavy. They're made of metal and a lot of rubber and, you know.
Probably just, pretty big, too.
Yeah, pretty big. And they looked like the race cars of the time. So they had that kind of IndyCar look at the time, you know, the open roadster type look. And if you tether a car, you don't want to run along behind it because, you know, you're not going to have a very fast car. I mean, it's only as fast as you can run. And these cars were, at the time, they were reaching about 40 miles per hour. There's no way you're going to follow
that. No.
So if you're holding a tether, it makes perfect sense that you can't go in an oval, you can't go in a figure eight, you can only go in a circle. And you could spin, you stand in the center and you hold the tether in both hands and you let the car drive in a circle around you, a perfect circle around you.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, runs until it runs out of fuel or somebody shuts it down in some way. So the circular track makes sense, and that's carried through to today, of course. But it's just an interesting thing. You know, you can just see how it's progressed through the years. And by that started in 1937, and by 1948, they estimate around 2,500 to 3,000 people involved in this hobby, in this sport. And there were 440 tracks in the United States at one time.
Wow.
And I've never seen a track.
I've only seen them on the videos, man.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Do you know how many there are now?
No.
Three.
There are only three?
There are only three.
In the U.S. or in
three
the world?
Three in the United States, and there's a couple in Europe and one in Australia that I know of.
Wow.
So going, again, from 440 in the United States to down to three. So if you live in California, I think the name of the track, it's in Whittier Narrows, or in New York, I'm going to mispronounce this.
All right.
Wantagh, I think is how you say it. W-A-N-T-A-G-H. And if you live in Indiana, somewhere near Anderson, you'd be able to find the track. But those are the only three that are in the United States right now. And then again, there's, you know, one in Germany that I know of, and one in Australia.
Now, if these are tracks, and they're matching what I have in my head, which could be completely incorrect, it sounds like you're implying there are some races.
There are races. Yeah, There are races. One quick thing before we get past the tracks, and I'll get. I promise you, I'll get to the races right after that.
Okay.
Because that's unique as well. The track itself, I've got kind of a layout here of what the modern track includes. Now the guys aren't standing in the center spinning around with a tether in their hand anymore.
Oh.
And there's a good reason for that. The cars have gotten smaller. In fact, the cars are now, I think they said that they're between 2 and 6 pounds. So 6 pounds, that's pretty heavy still.
Yeah, 6 pounds is pretty heavy.
The length of the car is about a foot to maybe 2.5 feet long for the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of more of a streamliner shape at this point. But they are, again, you know, 2 pounds to 6 pounds, that's pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about, here's one of the bombs I'm going to drop, 200 miles per hour.
What?
200 miles per hour. These cars go 200 miles per hour. I'm not kidding. Not scale miles per hour. This is 200 miles per hour.
That's a pretty quick spin if you're spinning around in a
circle. I tell you, watch the video. I say this over and over again. I was totally blown away by this 200 mile per hour thing because, you know, they start up and you see it kind of whizzing around the track.
Sure.
And it's going pretty fast.
Yeah.
By the time it hits top speed, you can barely see this thing moving. It goes around, I mean, it must have been several times a second, and you're talking about a track that has a diameter of, I think it's 60-some feet, like 66 feet or 70 feet. Ridiculously fast. You wouldn't believe, and they sound really cool, and they do it too. It's just kind of a buzzing noise, and it really, you can barely see the car when it's at top
speed. It's like the tether as it moves almost becomes a continuous cone.
You don't even see the tether, which is a real heavy steel cable. And you know, I kind of got a little off track, but I'll get right back to it. The person standing in the center of the ring is now replaced by a very heavy metal pole. And the reason that they had to do this is because you can imagine that holding a car on a metal tether that's spinning at 200 miles per hour, there's no way you're going to keep up with that. And here's another bomb I'm going to drop here. I'm going to look at my notes. You know what G-forces are, right?
Yes.
Okay, so gravity, it affects the way it affects this vehicle. Let's say the car weighs 6 pounds. Let's say it weighs 5 pounds to make this easy.
Okay.
5 pounds. So let's say at 1G it weighs 5 pounds. Right?
Sure.
Is that right? Whatever. As it grows, these things, you know, let's say racers experience, you know, 3 or 4 G's in the turns, you know, something like that. That means that if your arm feels like it weighs 10 pounds, it feels like it weighs 50 pounds or 60 pounds. These cars pull 91 G's when they're at top speed.
So that would throw you like a harder than a rodeo bull.
90? Yeah, that's right. I didn't expect that.
But, I mean, that's kind of true.
91 G's is what these cars pull when they're going 200 miles per hour. So imagine holding on to a car that now feels like it weighs about 500 pounds at the end of a string spinning at 200 miles per hour.
And let's insert a word there. Imagine trying to hold on.
Yeah, there's just no way.
You couldn't do it.
There's no way. I'm sure it was hard enough to hold on to a car that was going 40 miles per hour when it weighed 10 pounds. That's probably hard enough, but there's just no way that it's even physically possible at this point. So there's this real heavy-duty pole that's now positioned at the center of a track, the very dead center. It's got a bearing attached to it, and that's where the cable is attached. It's a real heavy metal cable.
Okay.
The cable goes out to a concrete track, which is perfectly flat, and that's the circular track that you see on the outside ring. Now there's somebody, and there's a platform on top of that bearing on the pole. And the reason for that is that there has to be somebody in the center initially when this thing starts up. And there's two people that are involved in a race. And we're getting to the races that you talked about.
Oh, good.
Two people that are in charge of this or that are on the track during a race.
Mm-hmm.
One is called the horser. And the horser is the guy that stands in the middle. And he's doing what it kind of sounds like. He's horsing the car up to speed.
Oh,
he's holding the cable.
Just pulling the tether, huh?
Yeah, he's pulling the tether, and he's really just kind of, all he's really doing is keeping it off the ground until the car gets up to speed, because the cable will drag on the ground or will touch the ground until the car reaches, I think it's about 80 to 90 miles per hour. You know, that distance, the cable would just sag and hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to hold the cable up in the air and, you know, walk around with the cable. And it's possible at this point. You know, he's moving pretty quick at this point, but it's possible. He's got, you know, heavy gloves on, and he's got to be sure-footed as well. You know, make sure he doesn't trip, because
right.
You know, once this thing gets going,
it's gone.
It would, I don't know. I don't know if it cut you in half or what. Seems like it would. Maybe not.
You would certainly notice the impact.
I think you'd feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one other guy involved, and he's the starter. And the starter pushes the cars to start them with a broomstick or something like that.
Okay.
And really, that's all it takes. It's like, you know, like when I said you had to you know, start the plane motor by spinning the propeller.
Yeah.
Same idea with the wheels in the car. You have to push start the car.
Give him that initial force.
Yeah, he gives him a quick initial push with a broom, and then he quickly gets out of the way.
How about this, man? You be the horser. I'll be the starter. We can switch if
Fair
you
enough.
Want.
Danger. I'll take the dangerous dangerous road. But once he gets the car going, once the horser gets the car up to speed, he judges when it's time to step up onto that platform, and then all he does is stand on that platform and hang onto that pole for dear life, because he doesn't want to be anywhere near that cable when the car is going as fast as it goes.
Oh, yeah.
So he's clutching the cable or the pole while he's standing on this small platform above the bearing, so that the cable is spinning beneath him. Now, the way the cars stop, they don't run out of fuel. I suppose that could happen, but the starter reaches into the track with a broom, the bottom side of the broom, the soft side, and just barely touches the top of the car as it comes by, you know, one of the many times it comes by, barely touches it, and that triggers a fuel shutoff, and that's how the car slows down and stops.
Well, that sounds like a pretty precise action.
It is. It really is, and I mean, again, the horser has a dangerous position there. I mean, both of them do, because he has to, you know, the starter has to get out of there in time because the car comes around really fast. And now the horser is probably in the most danger at that point, I would say.
I would say the horser is. And I think it's fair to say the person clinging to the pole while the tether is flying
now,
just under them.
Now, the 200 miles we're talking about, the 200 miles per hour, that's the top-end cars. That's the 10cc cars.
Okay.
They progress all the way down to, I think it's 1.5cc's.
Oh, okay.
I got my notes here. Yeah, there's several classes. There's 1.5, 2.5, 3.5, and 5, and then 10 is kind of the big daddy, you know. And the world record speed, it's held by an Australian right now. I just checked the site. It is held at 214.348 miles per hour.
Jeez.
And the way they measure that, and this is the races that you talked about.
Okay.
The races are not more than one car on the track at a time. They're a single car. It's a timed. It's an average speed rather of 8 laps. So 8 laps at full speed, the average speed of those 8 laps is what they count, and these are all electronically scored. And at the tracks, you'll see these, you know, big readouts of the car speed. So you can see it gaining every time that it goes around. And these things gain something like 10, you know, it's right about 10 miles per hour each lap that they go. But once they get up to speed, they maintain that speed. And 8 laps, you'd be surprised how fast 8 laps goes at that speed. Well, actually, you won't because you've seen it.
Yeah, I was thinking, it went very quickly.
8 laps is a matter of seconds, really.
Right. So I wonder, it makes you wonder how many vehicles would compete in a race, just because, you know, I'm sure it could vary.
Oh, well, that's the other, this is kind of a sad fact, really.
What's that?
And remember how I said that there were 2,500 to 3,000 members at a certain point in history, like back in the late 40s, I think?
Sure.
Well, after World War II, the sport nearly went away. It was just about dead. There were very few, and that's when all the tracks went away, and that's when membership dropped for the AMRCA. Membership level right now of AMRCA is down to 150 members. So that's three tracks nationwide, 150 members, and that's all.
So these folks are traveling. With 150 members, these folks must be traveling to each location.
I think so. I think they do that. I mean, I'm sure that there are some that just only participate in their local events. There are others that travel to the worldwide events. Aside from national events, they're worldwide events. And, you know, that's where you get the Australians coming over to compete and the Germans. And, you know, we head over there to compete as well. So I'm part of the membership. Not yet, but hey. You know, the Americans travel to compete in these events as well. And I don't know. It's sad that, you know, it's gone from 440 tracks down to three, and that it's gone from 3,000 members down to 150. And a lot of the members, not all of them, but a lot of them are, you know, elderly members that, you know, these guys are creating their own parts in their own machine shop, and they're fine-tuning the cars for, you know, they say it may take hours to get just, a half mile per hour gain on the track. And, you know, but it's, I guess, for the love of the sport. You know, they're sure. building their own parts, they're building their own cars, and it's really all about fine-tuning, precision. I think it originally kind of attracted engineers and people like that, you know, that were fascinated
that.
To begin with. So, man, I've said a lot about this, haven't I?
I think you've said some very interesting stuff about it, but I can't let you off the hook yet, or we can't let each other off the hook until we say how someone could get started in this if you want to be number 151.
You know what? I say go ahead and do it. I think that's a great idea because, you know, clearly, I don't know. To me, it's something that I'd hate to see go away.
Yeah.
I mean, I would really like to see this last. And if you're able to participate in this or you want to participate in this, and I got to tell you, if you're in the area and you like this type of thing and you see this video of tether car racing,
yeah,
I think you'll want to do it.
Go check it out.
The way to get a hold of them is to go to the AMRCA website, which is, again, American Miniature Racing Car Association, and they've got membership information there. I don't know if there's any kind of fee involved. I'm just not sure, Ben. But, again, contact that group directly, and I'm sure that they'd love to sign you up.
Awesome. Yeah. And so all our listeners there, you heard it here. If you want to learn about tethered cars, go ahead and check that out. And before we close out, I guess we can do a piece of listener mail if you want.
I'd love to.
All right. So check it out, Scott. Ken from Brownfield writes in and says, hi, guys, regarding your podcast about the James Dean Porsche or Porsche and all the coincidences and strangeness surrounding his Porsche or Porsche. This is me adding that. Keep in mind this quote, in a world of cause and effect, all coincidences become suspect. Ken also cites that he is not sure if James Dean originated this quote, or if he... Okay, let me see. I'm sorry, Ken. He's not sure if James Dean originated this quote, but he heard it from his brother, Russ.
Okay, so he's saying this could be just a string of coincidences that that were fabricated into this this myth, or this mythical thing. Yeah,
this whole story.
Which is, I don't know, that's kind of an interesting idea. That's kind of my my idea. Is I say that to me, I'm a skeptic.
Yeah, you took that personality test.
Yeah, to me.
said you're a skeptic.
Yeah, to me, I'm just... I think he's right. I think it's just a series of unfortunate coincidences that have evolved into this this car being a mythical object. And I don't know. I just don't know if I buy it yet or not. I've been thinking a lot about it recently, though.
Oh yeah.
And because I get listener mail that kind of trickles in about this here and there, and people are either they're saying yeah, it's definitely cursed, or they're in my camp where they say I don't know, I'm not quite buying it yet.
Yeah, I want to believe it so much, but yeah. It's a very good point about our perspective makes a coincidence sometimes.
Yeah, it depends on your viewpoint, really.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for writing in, Ken. And again, to our listeners, we appreciate you lending us an ear. If you have any ideas about a future topic you'd like to learn more about, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.